Could you start off by telling us who you are and what you do?
Sure. So I'm Will Balker, CEO and co-founder of Mint. I founded Mint back with a couple of co-founders back in 2016 and have been building a business for the last 8 years now.
What was the inspiration for?
I myself and another co-founder at the time used to work with Lanzatech, a very successful New Zealand clean tech company. I joined Lanzatech early on in the journey, 2007, and kind of the company grew, and my role in that grew as well, and essentially doing morphed into a role where I was doing essentially all things commercial, a lot of the IP strategy, a lot of the capital raising, a lot of partnership engagement. And when Lanzatech outgrew New Zealand and shifted to the US, I took the opportunity to step out and start a new venture. So through that Lanzatech journey, my passion became climate tech. And wanted to apply those skills to a new venture, a bit of a bias towards waste to value, and a bit of a bias towards kind of chem, bio, that sort of thing. So that was the foundation, really.
Were there any key lessons in those very early days?
One of the big fundamentals that we kind of took out of Lanzatech, and this is not from learnings from Lanzatech, but this is learnings from the journey, if you like, was waste to value is hard. It's really hard. Taking a waste stream to create a value product is really challenging. Primarily because of the economics. You're taking a waste stream that has a carbon and energy value, and you're producing a value product of some description. And if that value product is not way, way, way more valuable than the input, then the economics are always going to be challenged. So when we founded Mint, we had that in mind. How do we maximize the differential between the value of the input and the value of the output? And just being, you know, daft chemists, we thought, right, gold's really, really valuable. How do we extract that from a waste stream? And so we developed the technology from there.
So you've got a pilot plant in New Zealand. How did that come about?
Yeah, so we actually call it a demo plant, but so our journey started at Set Ventures back in 2016, and it's been a pretty stereotypical venture-funded journey for us, kind of through a seed fundraise proof of concept that enabled us to build a pilot plant here at Outset. It's a relatively small pilot, but enables us to use real-world feedstocks and recover interesting amounts of the product. So amounts of product that you can see, that you can hold. And that enables us to then design what the New Zealand demo looks like and raise the capital necessary to build the demo. That was back in 2020. Built the demo, which is in East Taranaki, and that is that's configured for ton scale. So a reasonably significant scale. We call it pre-commercial because it's kind of on the verge of commercial, using commercial volumes of material, but not necessarily having all of the feedback and recycling loops that are necessary for commercial operations. So, and that kind of teaches us what a commercial plant looks like, and enables us to design that commercial plant. And ultimately, that's exactly what we've done.
And that's where you're at now, going to Sydney.
That's exactly where we're at now. So Sydney. So we that demo plant, the success of that demo plant, enabled us to close out our latest cash raise, our Series C cash raise, which is about $65 million. Back at the beginning of 2023, we'd actually already built the plant, but that's kind of enables us to operate that plant. So we commissioned the plant through 23, and now pushing that plant through production. So ramping up production right now, and that plant is fully commercial. So it's essentially configured to recover the value from all of Sydney's e-waste starting with gold, copper, but then potentially some other metals as well.
So you've been in operation there for about a year?
Yeah, correct. Yeah. It's operation, it's a kind of commissioning. It's a little bit stop-start, and that's the nature of the beast, but making really, really good progress.
Could you talk us through your technology?
Sure. So as I said, we recover gold from electronic waste, but I guess the challenge, the problem that we solve is that everybody knows that e-waste contains these valuable metals. The challenge with e-waste, and actually we focus on circuit boards, we work with recyclers who are receiving, for example, cell phones, laptops, servers, those sorts of things. They're breaking down the different products into different value fractions. They're breaking it down into a plastic stream, steel frame, a battery, and a circuit board. And they deliver the circuit boards to us. So you think about Sydney, they're collecting thousands of tons of circuit boards, or hundreds of thousands of tons of e-waste, and then breaking that down into thousands of tons of circuit boards, which they're delivering to us. Those circuit boards are pretty complex. They contain a lot of different metals. They contain about 40 different metals. The real challenge with those metals is that the gold, the most valuable component, represents about 70% of the total value, but it's the least abundant of all those metals, and it's the least reactive of all those metals. So getting it out is nigh on impossible. It's a real needle in that haystack, and that needle really doesn't want to come out. So we've developed a technology that enables that, basically, to recover the gold. And basically we take a circuit board, we grind this up into a coarse sand material, we dissolve all the metals, all 40 metals, into solution, and then we use our own proprietary biomaterial to go in there, selectively recover the gold, and we basically use it as a sponge, which we can then refine into pure gold. Once we've recovered the gold, the metal that pays for the process, then we're able to use chemistry to recover the more concentrated metals, the copper, the tin, the silver, and so our plant is based around those principles.
So you've got a plant in Australia and Sydney. So are you planning on growing that in Australia?
Not necessarily in Australia. Yeah. Certainly, opportunity in Australia. But the first step for us is outside Australia. We're looking for the first plant is a prototype plant. It's a commercial plant, but it's a prototype plant. So we're currently optimizing that plant and understanding what the full design of our cookie cutter commercial offering looks like. And the philosophy behind what we do is we're taking the plants to the waste streams. So these waste streams are created in urban environments. You and I are carrying around future e-waste in our pockets, and that e-waste eventually finds its way to recyclers in city environments. And so if you want to recover the value in the city, you need to be building to match the scale of that feedstock in that city. You need to be building a plant that is consistent with city applications. So it needs to slide into existing warehouse infrastructure, tie into power, city power, city water, city wastewater. Can't produce any nasties, nothing like that. So that's exactly what we designed. And now we look overseas, we're looking for other good, reasonable size population density with good recycling infrastructure that where we can build the next plants. We do have a very strong lead candidate, and we are close to signing a lease on that place. I'm not going to tell you where it is because we won't announce it in due course. But our primary focus is US and Europe.
Is your product very unique? Is there anything else out there that's similar?
It's entirely unique. Right now, if a recycler wants to monetize a circuit board, talk about a Sydney recycler, that recycler needs to collect up a container full of material and ship that container off to Northeast Asia or Europe to a copper smelter, where that material gets tipped into a copper smelter. Obviously, a high carbon producing process produces a bunch of nasties, and over time the metals of interest are recovered, and they go on to pay the recycler. It's quite a long, dirty, kind of expensive process. So the unique thing that we solve is we're doing it locally. We're doing it in the back garden of the recycle. We take it kind of literally over the fence, and they wait days rather than months to get paid.
And then, how does your environmental footprint compare?
So the smelters are a little cagey over there. They're carbon footprint, if you like, and probably for good reason. But I've seen reports that indicate they're very similar to mining virgin materials. So they are recyclers, but they're similar to mining virgin materials. So if we look at the carbon footprint of mining, for example, gold, and a lot of that's dug out of the ground, just like South Africa. And the challenge with gold mining and a lot of resource mining is that the metals of interest are, they are very, very low concentration. So you are digging out in a ton of rock, you're digging out maybe maximum 10 grams of gold. So you've got a lot of digging, a lot of blasting, and then a lot of dissolving. And so very, very high carbon process. So the carbon footprint of a kilogram of gold is about 22 tons of carbon dioxide. We're over 90% more efficient. So our process is a lot greener.
Have you been able to make good grants and with market entry?
Yes, we absolutely. So our proposition is that the recyclers, they got two options. They can ship it offshore halfway around the world and get paid 6 months, or they can send it around the corner to us and get paid in less than 6 weeks. So it's a pretty easy proposition for us to sell. As we ramp up the plant, we're bringing on new customers all the time. We're pushing against an open door, as people like to say.
Yep. Are there any significant achievements or awards that you have gained over the past year or so?
We kind of pick stuff up all the time. It's the nature of the beast. I don't like these sorts of things, these awards. There's often a bit of self-promotion, something I'm not very good at, but we do put ourselves out there, and it is important for us to get recognised because it actually helps with our investment story and it helps with our traction when we go to markets. So we were 2022, we were the World Economic Forum New Pioneers. A very small cohort of about 20 companies from all over the world, which is kind of a pretty select group. In 2023, we won two awards in Sydney's Innovation Awards, Australia's Innovation Awards, which is kind of the equivalent to the High Tech Awards, or previous High Tech Awards. So we do win a lot of awards, but it's not something I'm particularly. Strong on, yeah. It's a bit of, again, nature of the beast.
Yeah. How have early partners like Outset Ventures influenced Mint's development?
Yeah, so we started in an asset downstairs, doing deep tech is really challenging for a private company. When you start off as a private company, you are basically just two people, and you don't have access to things like scientific instruments. You can't necessarily order biological materials. You can't order chemicals, those sorts of things. So having a place that has the appropriate licensing in place to hold and store what are sometimes dangerous chemicals was hugely valuable for us. Being able to use fume hoods, for example, when you're doing chemical processing was extremely valuable for us. Otherwise I'm doing it in my garage and I probably would have killed myself. Being able to have something like this does enable you to really create something that is not your standard garage innovation. The other thing about Outset is that kind of cohort, is the ecosystem that's built here. So you are, whilst you're developing all these things at safe and supportive environment, you're having lunch with other people who are going through similar pain, but also going through similar journeys. So they are well connected with the right people to. Yeah, even where do you get chemicals from? Where do you get your IP done? Who do you raise money from? All those sorts of questions. As an environment to kind of scale, that's Outset kind of organically provides all those benefits.
Yep. How did the partnership with Outset Ventures come about?
And so uh, we actually we were a pretty early reasonably foundational part of Outset Starting. Back in the day, it was called Level 2, and I was working with Matt Rowe. In fact, we used to work together at LanzaTech, and he was looking to found Outset, or Level 2, then Outset, and I was looking to found Mint, and we were both working together on both projects. I needed space, I needed lab stuff, he needed tenants, he needed people, anchors, and so it kind of organically grew out of that. For a partnership perspective, it really, I don't think we could have done it without each other.
Hmm. And then what type of support at Outset, or what support from Outset has been the most valuable?
Yeah, it's our ecosystem. Working with everybody, working in an environment where there's 10, 20 other companies going through the same journey as you, having some of them at different stages, and being familiar with the journey that is not, you're making up as you go along, and having a data point of one, making up as you go along is dangerous. Having a data point of 20, or making up as they go along, you can learn from other people's mistakes, you can learn from other people's experiences, and really streamline that process. So it really is a real value add for us, and that was the most important thing.
In your opinion, how are partnerships like with incubators like Outset Ventures transforming deep tech startups?
Well, I don't think this sort of thing existed when we started. We were one of sort of, I'll go back even further. When LanzaTech started, there were no deep tech startups, certainly not in the chemistry, biology space. It was just considered too hard. There was no real venture capital in New Zealand. And to a certain extent, LanzaTech, Rocket Lab were trailblazers in that area. Not just identified a pathway for developing those deep technologies, but also shone a light for investors. You know, New Zealand's worth looking at. Then fast forward to when we started Mint, the ecosystem is really starting to mature. So investors are now venture capital in New Zealand. Overseas investors are now looking at New Zealand much more seriously. But from a kind of incubator perspective, there's not a lot around still. There's a lot of people making up as they go along, and that's what we faced early doors. So Outset was really at the beginning of that journey, and started to grow the space, and now we've got we've got tons of services, not just Outset but a lot of others as well. And as a new founder, you've got all these wraparound services, you've got a cohort of 20 plus different companies, you've got some really, really good access to capital, everybody's got good IP stories, so it's a really, it's a great place to start building companies now.
Yep. What advice do you have for entrepreneurs seeking partnerships with incubators like Outset?
Look, they're not all created equal. I think Outset is pretty unique. The ecosystem, being on campus, if you like, the only campus-based incubator was phenomenally helpful for us. And I see the other companies here that are growing very successfully because of that campus-based approach. And it's really having that new cohort around you, not just from a support perspective, but just all those benefits from rubbing shoulders with people who've grown unicorns, and all the way down to that, and people who failed as well. Having all of those people around you, learn from all of those collective experience mistakes is massive. And I don't think any of the other incubators have that. Access to capital, all of the incubators, and that's really, really positive for the New Zealand ecosystem on the whole. But Outset, the unique offering that Outset have is, I think, truly transformative.
How crucial is finding the right investors and partners for sustainability and tech startups?
Look, sustainability, that's an interesting question. Is that sustainability for the company or sustainability for the planet?
I'd say planet.
Yes. Yeah. So look, we're in the climate and clean tech space. So for us, we are only interested in investors who are looking to make a difference, looking to change the world. And I would never look for an investor who doesn't have strong climate credentials and aligns well with our values and mission. And I think anyone in the clean tech space is going to say that as well.
Do you have any investment rounds coming?
Not at the moment. We are closed our Series C back in 2023, beginning of 2023. Current runway takes us through to 2025, probably around mid-25. So I will start hitting the investment trail end of this year, probably, which seems to come around very, very quickly for companies like ours.
Where do you see Mint Innovation in 5 to 10 years?
Yep, 5 years, we are looking to expand very, very quickly globally. I think once we hit the milestones that we've set ourselves for this current cash raise, we basically enable ourselves to grow exponentially from there. So for subsequent cash raise, the 2025 cash raise will be about kicking on to that exponential growth phase and starting to be able to build plants everywhere in parallel, identifying, you know, 4 or 5 different opportunities a year, and then building those plants year on year on year. So in 5 years' time, we're supposed to have a lot of plants in a lot of different geographies. We also have other technologies kind of extending the platform. We look at other waste streams with other interesting metals, lithium-ion batteries, for example. And we're uniquely positioned to be able to offer a very similar technology for that. So looking to progress that and get that to a mature state as well. 10 years' time, I look, it's world domination. It has to be world domination. We do have a very carbon mitigation story. Being able to offer circular metals back to the city where those metals were thrown away. Is extremely valuable to cities, countries all over the world. Data security, we help a lot there. So really looking to build some key partnerships with big tech firms who really want those metals for a sustainable future. So we become an integral part of, you know, the big tech firms' future aspirations.
Yeah, I think that almost answers my next question,
right?
Which is, how do you see Mint shaping the future of clean tech?
Yeah, and I don't think we're going to shape the future of clean tech necessarily, because clean tech is such a broad subject matter. And I think the mission critical clean tech technologies are carbon capture and carbon reuse. And we don't do that. We mitigate the amount of carbon being used. So for example, mining, as I said earlier, it's incredibly carbon intensive, and we're able to reduce pretty significantly the amounts of carbon released. So we will chip away at that. That's our sweet spot. But that's not going to reduce the amount of carbon that's pumped out through industry, through driving cars. So whilst we do, you know, we operate in a niche of clean tech, we don't necessarily, I don't think we're going to be necessarily direction setters. Having said that, I think our approach, which is value-driven, our ability, we founded the company based on the premise that you really need to look at very, very high-value products in order to make it successful from the outset. Our approach in looking for those high-value products is a game-changing way of looking at it. So, I think our approach where we look to maximize that differential between the value of the input stream and the value of the products that we're producing is pretty attractive, because that gets you over a lot of the inertia of poor economics, if you like, in the early stages when you have a proven economic model. And I think clean tech is going to have to move in that direction. I think that, technologies that are focusing on low-value products, on expensive carbon capture, things like that, it's just so difficult to get investment. So finding a way to make it fit and focusing on the technology is pretty critical.
On a personal note, what has been your most rewarding experience?
I'm growing the team. I'm so proud of who we are and what we've developed. Pretty much every member, of Mint is extremely values driven, extremely aligned with our mission. Actually, genuinely wants to make a difference in the world. And they're primarily a lot younger than I am, a lot more energy than I've got. But you know, they are looking to start. A lot of them starting their career with us and looking to kind of get into an area where they can truly make a difference to the world. So, and to a certain extent, I've enabled that through building Mint, kind of bringing this unique team together who all gets a real, a real kick out of growing something that's unique and is going to be part of our global solution to climate change. They inspire me.
Cool. For young entrepreneurs, or even older ones, but starting out in tech, do you have any advice?
Oh yeah, it's a tricky one. I actually call myself a reluctant entrepreneur. I've almost forced myself to become an entrepreneur because I've got this skill set where I can build companies, and I can kind of look at technologies and scale technologies. So I've done that. I've had to change the way I do things. I've had to change the way I think in order to do that. I think there's a lot of natural entrepreneurs out there, and for them, just go for it. Just get in there, roll your sleeves up, give it a go. Don't be afraid to fail. And I think for the reluctant entrepreneurs, I see a lot across science, and particularly my area, chemistry, where we are a little stereotypical science people. Like to wear chemicals in the lab, and sometimes don't like interacting out there. But we can all do it. We can all get out of that space. And if you've got a belief in what you do can change the world in a positive way, just get out there and do it. You can learn those skill sets. You can develop those networks. You can wrap around the support that you need in order to get out there and just get on with it. Do it, because without serious intervention from some seriously good ideas, climate change is we're in terminal decline on this planet. Mm.
It's interesting that you said that, because I'd say it's portfolio companies that I've been a lot of the CEOs do talk on how a lot of their teams are introverted, and how Artset has actually supported them in that, having their events and just the community here has been a great support, getting them out of their shells.
Yeah, look, it's extremely valuable, and we encourage our team to get involved. It is a stereotype. Science, deep tech, science engineers. I call myself one, so I don't want to belittle anybody, but you do tend to be data-driven, quite a lot black and white, and to some extent find that social interaction and that putting yourself out there, self-promotion, and find that quite difficult. Again, I'm overgeneralizing, but I've certainly seen a few, including myself. So, and the only way to break that down is through challenging yourself. I think, as you say, through events, through networking, through advisors, through similar cohort, you absolutely break that down. It just happens organically, and we create new founders. When I joined LanzaTech back in 2007, I was a patent attorney. I had a lovely office, and I was expecting to maintain the rest of my career in that area, not having to doing a lot of reports, not having to communicate too much. Joined LanzaTech and just being amongst that cohort. It was a growing company. Joined when I think I was employee number 14, and by the time left the country, we were 200. It just kind of forces you to be what you can be, and outside does that too. And over that journey, I turned from directors who were in patent attorney didn't want to talk to anybody, to a founder. I believe I can change the world. So all positive stuff.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time. We look forward to seeing what's going to happen in the next couple of years.
Indeed,
with your different plans.
Exciting times.